Good morning. May it please the court, I am John Reha, the attorney for the appellant U.S. Welding, and with me at counsel's table is Jess Kirshner, contracts administrator at U.S. Welding. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, you'll know by the module, and I'll wave at you or give you some sign.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I would like to start with addressing the order that the court issued last Thursday for the parties to be prepared to discuss the PNM Vending Company case. For some reason, no one found that in research, but it appears that the PNM Vending case may make the law in this case fairly settled. It appears that the only significant distinction between the factual setting of that case and the factual setting of this case is that in PNM, the damages were under a liquidated damages provision in a contract. They're not here. Here we have lost profits damages under an express contract, but not under a liquidated damages clause. Although PNM is a liquidated damages case, this court dispensed with that matter fairly quickly and went right into discussing lost profits damages and whether it was proper when administrative costs were fixed to allow damages to be established without taking those into account. We did cite to the automatic vending case out of California, which is remarkable. That case is identical to the PNM case except for the fact that PNM has a liquidated damages provision. They're both cases that involve the rental, placement and rental in a restaurant of a cigarette vending machine. Both cases involve the restaurant breaching the agreement by having the machine removed before the term of the contract ended. And in both cases, the court found that it was not necessary to take into account general administrative expenses, expenses having to do with maintenance of machines, repair, filling machines, that sort of thing, to come to an appropriate lost profits measure of damages. And the reason the courts did so is that in both situations, you're talking about a vending machine company which had a fairly large number of machines in the field, and the loss of one machine wouldn't affect the operations of the vending machine company really at all. It would be negligible. In PNM, there were 2,000 machines in the Denver metro area. We're talking about the loss of one. And in that case, this court said in those circumstances, operations don't change. It really is literally a blip, and just a blip. That's all that it is, and it shouldn't be taken into account. In that case, the plaintiff put on as its lost profits proof damages which took into account the gross revenue of the cigarettes less the cost of the cigarettes, basically. And this court said that that was an appropriate measure of damages. Now, if we can take those facts and come over to our case here. Our facts, although it's a different industry, are extremely analogous, and I would say legally they're the same. Here we've got a supplier of industrial gases, acetylene, oxygen, carbon dioxide, those sorts of things. And like in the PNM and automatic vending cases, we have a customer which represents a negligible part of that large distributor's business. And if I could just focus on acetylene for a second, and these are all facts that were put into evidence, if I could. Everything I'm going to refer to was put into evidence. Here, as to acetylene, we're talking about 11 of those bottles, the cylinders, per month. That's out of 6,500 cylinders that U.S. Welding produces and distributes in its market. It's, I think we put in our brief that it is 1/17 of 1%. And if we look at the PNM case, ratio was 1 out of 2,000. Here we're talking about 11 out of 6,500. It's pretty close to the same ratio. I do concede that in the PNM case, the ratio was less, but it's not less by much.
One of the differences between PNM vending and your case with respect to acetylene is you manufacture the acetylene.
We do.
And normally, the underlying cost for gross profits in a manufacturing operation includes direct labor and direct factory overhead, neither of which were dealt with in the evidence, as near as I can tell. Do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Again, this was in evidence. It's in our brief, and everything referred to was actually a matter that was put into evidence at trial. Our production of these gases would be the same regardless. Acetyl is actually manufactured in Salt Lake City at a facility we have there. It's shipped here in a large 18-wheel rig. And we're going to ship the same amount regardless of whether or not one small customer buys a few bottles a month. That's the reason that we did not take those costs into account, because they wouldn't change. They would still be a constant.
Even if you hauled one or two cylinders less, you still drive the truck and the overhead would remain the same.
The same fuel costs, the same wear and tear on the truck, nothing changes. We tried to bring this down to a very easy to grasp point, and it's simply this. The only difference that not having these two defendants to service anymore is that our route driver going by their facility anyway, it's in Commerce City, it's an industrial area. We have a number of routes that go by their door every day. The only difference is the truck doesn't make a left turn and go about 100 feet. That's it. That's the only difference. And that's that route truck. The 18-wheel rig coming from Salt Lake City doesn't have any change in its operations whatsoever. And another fact that was in evidence that speaks to this point is that U.S. Welding has a buffer system. All large distributors of product do this. We have a buffer system where we overproduce gases because we have people that come in on an as-needed basis who made a small auto repair shop, might have one acetylene torch, and they might need to come in and purchase a cylinder of acetylene once a month or twice, once every other month. So we have excess inventory that we produce anyway. So we're still going to take that full processing into account. Nothing is going to change. So those are the evidence at trial. I hope that responds to your question. Obviously, general administrative expenses, they don't change. They're a customer of this size, and again, it's 11 cylinders of acetylene. It's 14 of oxygen out of thousands, and four, or maybe perhaps nine, of carbon dioxide. Again, it's extremely, extremely small percentage.
My understanding is that you don't manufacture the CO2 and the oxygen. You buy it in bulk and transfer it to cylinders.
That's right. We have a transfer station down at I-25 in Santa Fe, the main facility, and we fill bottles there of those. You're right. So as to those, we don't even have the issue as to processing the gas itself. Acetylene is actually made from carbon calcite or something.
Calcium like carbide.
Thank you. Calcium carbide. And I'm trying to figure out, I think oxygen, perhaps carbon dioxide.
Water and toluene or whatever it is makes acetylene.
You must work on cars as a hobby.
No, I read your briefs and I've read the record.
Well, I want to focus on PNM for you, but I'm getting close to my 5 minutes of looking here. So our costs didn't change, and like in PNM, it was completely appropriate for us to seek a damage measure that did not take those into account. Now, when you say gross profits, and we gave you Judge Kane's quote from the carriage bags case, where he really did, I think, nail this down. He said it doesn't matter what the label is, because people get caught up on that. if it's gross or net. That's not important. What's important is that you take out those costs, and in fact you do save, but you don't take out those, you don't. And we were guided by Judge Kane's opinion when we put together our trial presentation. We tried to do exactly what he seemed to say was the way you should do this. Those costs that were appropriate were taken out. The cost of the product, just like in PNM, that was appropriate, but not save delivery charges, not save processing costs, because we didn't save any. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Jim Bull, 3213. And we don't think that this is really a difficult law case in the sense of what is the law. The problem was it was a difficult proof case. The PNM case just says if you have fixed overhead, the net profits are the same as gross profits. And actually, the last case I argued before a division of this Court of Appeals was on the other side of that issue, and I won that one.
But you, as Lincoln once said, you're very sure you're correct today.
It is kind of amazing. I was over there, of course. And what we did in that case, which didn't happen in this case, was we brought in all of our documentation to show what the administrative costs were, what the manufacturing costs were, what the sales costs were, and we argued the loss of this revenue went to the bottom line because we covered all of our other expenses. Now, what happened in this case, and Mr. Lee did not try this case, what happened in this case was the trial lawyer couldn't come up with any documents on a timely basis. First, we asked, they elected 16.1, which is a dumb rule. After 42 years of trying cases, I hate that rule. Is it takes everything I learned in law school and throws it out the window.
Takes a lot of the game out of it, too.
That's true, Your Honor. So we asked them to give us the background for their claim damages. And the first thing that happened was, no, you can't have it because we're under 16.1. Well, the trial judge said, well, you're under 16.1, so I'm ordering the plaintiff to supply everything that they think goes into their package of damages and the liability 90 days before trial, which was then set in December. And now that was an important day for me because I moved to Frisco, Colorado 2 years ago. And it was the worst snowstorm of the weekend in December. And I came down the night before. It took me 3 hours to get from Frisco to out here in Golden. I'll never forget that drive. But the bottom line was I went into the courtroom 4 days before the trial with 50 new documents because I kept telling the trial lawyer in the case, you haven't even established what your gross profits are because the manufacturing costs were never disclosed. They gave me a summary of what the dry cost was of calcium carbide, for example.
That's certainly the most expensive ingredient.
Yeah, it is. But they have to make it, just as you said. And they have to put it all together, and they have a big manufacturing plant in Salt Lake City, and they totally ignored. They say, oh, well, the transportation, I'll just forget that. It's all the same. And I said, well, give me the documentation to show that. No, you don't need that. Just take my word for it. Believe me. I said, that's not the way you try a case. You got to give me the documents that your judge said you got to give me. So we got the new trial date on April Fool's Day, a year ago. And within 3 weeks before trial, I get a whole new batch of documents plus They finally decided somebody that really knows what's going on has to be designated as a witness. So they designated the plant manager. And Joseph Waller tried the case, and he didn't. The first thing he did is he said, well, you're designating new documents and new witnesses within 30 days of the trial, and you can't have it. That's not right. So we're not going to let you do that. So Mr. Kirshner, who was a very nice man, seated here, testified about all of the stuff that he has really no basis for testifying. I mean, so it became an issue of, do you have a foundation for what you're talking about? They didn't. And the bottom line is, we don't get to net profits because they couldn't even establish what their gross profits were because half of their documentation was not there. Part of it came in within 30 days. We were running around trying to figure out what is all this stuff. And it would have been really easy had they just given it to me 60 days, 90 days before trial, and I could have then had a witness lined up to do it. Well, what we did was we actually got a witness, but he never testified because the case got dismissed. I mean, we didn't even put on a case. So bottom line was the net profits rule that Lee Durango and PNM, that is the same case, same rule, except it's an evidentiary issue. If you have...
But there was a lot of evidence introduced. I mean, first of all, there was testimony that, as far as I know, was unobjected to about costs of operation from the contracts manager or someone else. Plus, there were exhibits of invoices of what all these things cost them, average costs, all of which supported Exhibit 23, which I'd agree the court rejected. Okay. Right. But there was factual support in the record enough to survive certainly a motion to dismiss.
Well, there was actually, there were a number of items our expert was going to testify to that were missing from their calculation of gross profits. We didn't get to the net profits issue. But we argued that without having the documentation to establish the opinion, and we did object to the opinion testimony as without foundation, and it's in the record. But without having the documentation to show what they're, I mean, they say there's no more administrative expense. They spent a lot of money administratively trying to put this case together. And for them to say they didn't have any administrative expense involved with it is silly. Because every time we said, you haven't given us the documents, somebody rushed off and got a new batch of documents. So the question, I mean, they claim that they're a $40 million company and this is such a little insignificant customer, but nothing's going to change is simply not logical. It's a manufacturing company, and a manufacturing company has ongoing expenses associated with manufacturing the product, none of which were put in the record.
Mr. Bull, I have a question if you can clarify. So I understand that the summary was not admitted because there was not all the supporting documents. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. You're saying,
but there were some supporting documents of damages that were introduced without objection?
No.
No.
What was available, what was at the trial, were some documents that supported the summary, but not all of the documents that supported the summary. That's what was actually at the trial.
And that relates to the acetylene. The latter group is the acetylene, if any.
Yes.
I mean, the oxygen and the CO2, they had the exhibits of the costs and so forth before the court.
Right. And so our argument was twofold. Number one, we said, Judge Wallach, they're not trying to prove their lost net profits. There's 23-cent gross profits.
That was right on the document. But number two, they don't have all of the documents here or available to me or ever given to me that supported 23. So it was a 106 objection there too. Now, at the end of the plaintiff's presentation, what Judge Wallach said was she didn't prove your damages. So, well, I'm going to dismiss the case. Now, technically, he probably should have let me put on my evidence, and then at the end of the case, so you don't have
any. You can always make a motion too soon.
You know,
I did it once.
I think another judge once told me, you know, motions for summary judgment are a double-edged sword. And I actually, this is one example, because if there's something wrong with the way Judge Wallach did it, then the technical way of arguing it is to say, well, send it back for the trial to the defendant's side, and then let him, if he thinks that there was a liability, then give him a dollar, and then you're out the door. Well, the problem with that argument now is it was never made at the trial court. It was never made in this brief. I looked at the issues in the briefs, and that's not an issue that's designated in any of the briefs. And as an afterthought, the person that wrote the brief said, well, we're at least entitled to nominal damages. Well, their own case that they cited, which was the Overland Development case, says nominal damages are $1. And I know I had a nominal damages case one time. We tried it for 4 days, and at the end of the day, we won $1. I said to my client, said, that doesn't really sound very good. I said, well, that's what happens when you prove a case but don't have any damages. So that's where we're at. I think they waived that whole issue myself because it was never raised to Judge Wallach. It was never argued to Judge Wallach. It isn't raised in the issues portion of the brief. It's thrown out there. So I don't think it's ripe for adjudication. I think it's waived. In any event, the bottom line here is Judge Wallach made an evidentiary determination. It's clearly not one that is meets the standard of abuse of discretion. He was the trial judge. He heard the witnesses and saw the demeanor and made the decision. And I believe it should stand. Thank you.
I have to correct a couple of things. I did try the case. I checked and my name's on all the pleadings. I think what counsel is confusing is that in my old firm, my associate handled a lot of the pretrial discovery issues and the document issues. I think that's what he's referring to. But most of this evidence was actually presented through witnesses that I had on the stand, unless that was all a dream, but I think I did. To address the issues that counsel's raising, and Judge Roy, you noted it as well, it's not simply whether there was sufficient evidence to support Exhibit 23, it's whether or not there was sufficient evidence of cost, appropriate cost in the record, and there were. Mr. Kirshner testified in detail about that. It's in the record. And Exhibit 23's exclusion was not only on the grounds of lack of supporting documents and lack of foundation, was also based upon Judge Wallach's elementary ruling that we had to establish all of our costs as part of our damage calculation. That's where the error is.
I think he said you had to allocate all of your overhead operating expenses.
He did. And I was going to get to that too. And if we break down cost, it's not just cost of production, it's also our overhead expenses that he found that we had to include. And that is abuse of discretion. At the time, as counsel's noted, he hadn't even put on his case yet. And the only evidence in the record on that was what I highlighted for you on my original part of my argument, that as far as general overhead, maintenance, fuel, all those general overhead expenses, all there was that lack of a left turn into their yard once in a while. That's it. And that evidence was in the record. It was in the record in volume. And to find that we had to articulate and divide out all those expenses was not only error, but I think as the PM and PM vending and the automatic vending cases show, it's virtually impossible to do. How are you going to apportion administrative expense when you're talking about 1/17 of 1% of your production?
1/17 of 1%?
No, but the reason you can't is because nothing changes. My point is, and the point in those cases is the same. The courts in those cases rule exactly the same way that I'm trying to argue that this court should rule. And that is, you don't look at it simply as a numerical calculation. You look at it on a practical level to see if, in fact, you're saving anything, and you're not. We didn't have to let a secretary go. Their day didn't change. Just as the route driver for the cigarette machine and P&M vending didn't change. He or she didn't make a stop at one restaurant out of hundreds. But again, it's negligible. If my milkman doesn't drop off 1 gallon of milk at my house on his route in the morning, has he really saved anything? No. He's gone by there anyway. Somebody else in my cul-de-sac is buying milk from him too. And there is nothing that changes except for a little tiny thing, which would be a driver getting out of a truck and unloading a couple of bottles. It takes him 5 or 10 minutes once a month, and that's it. I mean, it's so insignificant. And in the P&M and automatic vending cases, it's clear in the opinion that they recognize that it's so insignificant. So if we're held to a standard that we have to apportion all that and we have to take it into account, then I question whether or not P&M is still good law. Because, those cases in our case, except for the fact that different industries, they're factually the same when it comes to this issue. I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank both counsel for their briefs and argument. The case will be deemed submitted and a written opinion.